We've had cases where lawyers have been appointed for a fetus before the woman herself who's been locked up ever gets a lawyer. Cases where they've ordered a procedure over women's religious objections. And one court said, pregnant women, of course, have a right to religious freedom, unless it interferes with what we believe is best for the fetus or embryo.
Even here in a liberal bastion like New York City, where a recent report that more than a dozen city hospitals were routinely testing pregnant women for drugs without informing them about them.
Absolutely. And what we see both in the criminal and civil context is a disproportionate focus for punitive measures on women of color, particularly African-American women. We found that this disproportionality included the more greater likelihood of felony charges, greater likelihood of the doctor turning in an African-American woman. At the same time, we found these cases all over the country and against women of all races. So what we're seeing, and I'll just tell you about
we have 10 seconds.
That we are really talking about not just abortion rights. We are talking not only about reproductive rights, but whether or not, in the guise of trying to end just abortion, we are going to remove pregnant women from the community of constitutional persons.
Lynn Paltrow, we're going to link to your report at democracynow.org, founder and executive director of National Advocates for Pregnant Women. On Monday, we'll be in Washington, D.C., a five-hour special on the inauguration from 8 Eastern Standard Time to 1 in the afternoon. Check our website at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Special thanks to Rakham Penny today, his last day. We wish him the very best.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, Local News and Alternative Views, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Why is it new? Well, it's not the same as last week. That's right, every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. here. We broadcast live from Henry Ford Community College, WHFR.fm, the station making waves, and we cover local issues about Dearborn and the surrounding area. Today we do have an interview scheduled, we hope, with someone from Dearborn Heights. We're waiting for their arrival right now. But I do have my news director, Dennis Reimars, who has Dearborn Heights connections with us right here. So, Dennis, why don't you begin by maybe just briefly, while we're waiting for our guest, telling us about the Chamber of Commerce meeting where both Mayor Poletko and O'Reilly spoke?
Very interesting. It was actually, as you may know, the two chambers, Dearborn Chamber of Commerce and Dearborn Heights Chamber of Commerce, merged, and now it's called the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce, with many of the same people involved, and then obviously a few extra people to handle both communities. And this past Tuesday, they had this what they called the State of the City Address for both Dearborn and Dearborn Heights, and they had the joint speeches by both Dearborn Heights Mayor Poletko and Dearborn's Mayor O'Reilly. And basically it was, O'Reilly was funny because at one point, of course, Poletko went first, and this was at the Warren Valley Golf Course over on, mm-hmm. on Warren near Beach Daily, and Mayor Poletko went first, and he did his State of the City. Of course, we have a script here, but shortly after that, right after that, Mayor O'Reilly went, and he, right out of the gate, stated, it was kind of funny, Mary Londros, helps him with the communication. She's the director of information for the mm-hmm. city of Dearborn. And Mayor O'Reilly got up to the podium and he said, I brought this portfolio up here. I brought this with me just, because Mary gave me this. Mary wrote this. He goes, but I'm not going to even open it. Mary, no hard feelings. And the reason why is because he'd already scheduled the official Dearborn State of the City address for February.
Yes.
So as you know, Jay, and he's done this many times here in the studio when we've had an opportunity to discuss things with him, completely off the cuff. He went through, the man is a master of statistics and just a really quite an apt political mind.
Right. He knows a lot, and he's very willing to share specifics. And I see Mayor Poletko's speech, which we put down in a 10 size font here is still 17 pages. So,
exactly.
I mean, there's a lot of detail there, too. And certainly, you know, we can share some of that information with our listeners.
Because it
too,
was but. Sponsored by both the chambers or this new merged chamber.
Right.
I think rightly so, they focused on a lot on the business community and some of the new businesses coming.
Yeah, when they had the separate chamber, they let Pelleco have the whole meeting. But now that it's combined, it's kind of a slight if you don't have both mayors there And of course, I'm sure Pelleco is going to have a State of the City address sometime.
I think it'll be more
separately.
Focused. Exactly.
Yeah,
and I don't know if that's been planned. But, you know, and interestingly, afterward, they did, in fact, open the floor for questions. And that was really, people had asked things like the new train station. What's going on with that? And a lot of it wasn't new information. It was just stuff that maybe had been through the papers and that we'd covered.
There was a public hearings this week, I think on the, was it last night maybe? Again, the newspaper just mentioned it on Sunday and again on Wednesday that there was these public hearings, and I always think that's a little too it's short notice for anybody. First of all, you may not open your weekly paper for a couple of days after you get it, then the meeting is gone. And even for us, I think we knew of it. I got an email from Mary Landrosh to the media last Friday or Saturday, so it really, you know, it didn't get out there. Hopefully there would be a follow-up story from maybe patch.com or from in one of the two Dearborn papers about what issues came up, what topics people shared. Hopefully some people did attend and knew about it in advance enough in order to get there. But that's definitely an issue and a problem.
Well, and, you know, and I did see Sherry, my, I guess you'd call her, my counterpart at the Dearborn Times-Herald, Sherry Collade.
Yeah.
She was both at the State of the City addresses there, that the joint speeches. But I know she also was going to the hearing. So I would look in the Times Herald, maybe the Sunday edition, or possibly Wednesday. I don't know what her deadline was.
Oh well, okay. I got a couple of small topics here. One mentioned politics and representatives. George DeRaney is going to have his local constituent hours, as they're called, and he's announced the days and times. First of all, following a tradition of other reps, he's going to be at the Dearborn Senior Center. That's located at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, Michigan Avenue, near Greenfield there, from 11 to 1 p.m. on the last Friday of each month. At least it looks like that's the situation. That's been the tradition. So you don't have to reserve any time, but you don't have to be a senior. You can just go over there between 11 a.m. Up until 1 p.m. on the last Friday of each month at the Ford Community Performing Arts Center, the senior center that's inside that building. I think it's sort of on the east end. There's a meeting room they call the senior center. But added to that, it's not just going to be that, folks, because, of course, that's during the day. And so for the first time ever in the history of a local representative, he's having not breakfast meetings or daytime meetings, but evening meetings. And he's going to be at Leon's Family Dining from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. That's the restaurant in West Dearborn on Michigan Avenue before you get to Telegraph, north side of the street. And maybe it's like the second Monday. I can't tell by the dates, but February 11th is the next Monday that he's going to be there, and that's in the evening. So I don't know if he's got a sort of reserved banquet room or a couple tables are going to push together. But if you can't have a chance to talk directly to your Michigan representative to Lansing, George DeRaney, during the day, he's going to be there Monday evenings, and I think once a month, of course, but it looks like probably the second Monday of each month, February 11th, March 11th, April 8th, and so on. Although, of course, dates and times are subject to change because things can happen, you know.
Sure. They have plenty of room there. You brought up I think a lot of meetings are held there, so that can hold quite a few people.
Okay.
So that's, good. And that works in Representative DeRaney's favor.
Well, any representative, I think they need that time locally since he has to be pretty much, when you talk about a full-time legislator, they don't do Fridays. Sort of like Dearborn Heights doesn't do Fridays with their civic center and their government offices closed to save money, and that makes some sense to me. But nonetheless, if you have a problem that comes up on Thursday night, you got to wait till Monday to talk to City Hall. But nonetheless, I understand our legislature doesn't do too much on Mondays either. So that's probably why at least once a month, he can have this meeting. I mean, if he had to, he could just drive back to Dearborn and then go back up Tuesday morning.
Sure.
To make this evening meeting. But it's good to have hours, you know, daytime hours and also evening hours for people that actually have jobs and work during the day if they want to get and talk to them directly. Of course, I'm sure you could, you can call his office in Lansing and 517 area code. It's at the website mi.gov, and you can find out about your local representative, George Durini, that way. Also, he has the usual email, which is too long to mention over the air here, but it's all available at mi.gov, and you can search for George Durini and find out all those details. And so if you had a specific concern, you should directly call his office. Don't wait. If you have a need, send an email. That's true for all the representatives,
sure.
Senators, whatever. Use their phone line, send them an email. Sure, I'm sure you could probably even schedule a meeting to meet with them in Lansing if you happen to be in Lansing. But you don't have to schedule these local meetings. You can just drop by. I don't know how many people usually attend. Sometimes more people, probably sometimes fewer. But
right.
I think the odds are, especially for Leon's Family Dining, unless the word really gets around, not going to be that many people coming by. So.
Not initially, anyway. These things do take time,
right,
unfold.
To get the word around. So
yeah. I think he has, and you know, because of our, you know, the many times he's been in here in studio,
mm-hmm.
we have. I talked to his assistant. His I don't know what her exact title, but her name is Lori Dye, mm-hmm. and she is amazing. And there's usually a very quick turnaround on calls. So.
Mm-hmm.
Feel free to call her.
Another little bit in peace here. Again, we're waiting for our guests to arrive. And I want to mention Citizens for Peace, which is another peace action group in Michigan. And they are local. And maybe this is a good place. One of our loyal listeners informed me about them. I hadn't heard about them before. You know, we did have an interview for 30 minutes a couple weeks ago with the Michigan Peace Team. And talk about activists. I mean, they actually get training on how to mediate and how to defuse violent situations. There's several levels of that training. And then you can go out either here in Michigan or all the way maybe to the Middle East and try to bring about peace on a direct one-to-one basis. That's probably not the place you want to start in the peace movement, because you're in some cases putting your body on the line, if not your life. It is risky, especially in the Middle East sometimes. I also mentioned, I think in that interview, Peace Action of Michigan, and you can, again, you can look them up on a search engine, and you can also maybe if, especially if you are a practicing Roman Catholic, the Catholic Organization for Peace, sort of within the church or in a development within the church. Bishop Gumbleton is, I think, still leading Pax Christi, P-A-X Christi, C-H-R-I-S-T-I. That's a great organization that through your Catholic faith, you can maybe work to bring about peace locally and in the world. But Citizens for Peace, they have meetings pretty much monthly. I see, the second Tuesday of every month at 7 p.m. at the Unity Church of Livonia. That's on 5 Mile Road in Livonia. And the second Tuesday in February, the topic is Charter for Compassion. So more information, you can just use a search engine like Google. You can look up Citizens for Peace. It's actually Citizens for Peace 11, that is 11, dot blogspot, blogspot, .com. Okay? And that's the information about Citizens for Peace. And so they're primarily just a discussion group, and they have some movies that they present about the peace movement and how we can have an alternative to war and violence and killing. And so I would say that's probably the less active of the peace movements, but it's a good place to start on a regular basis to get more information about what we really, I think, all want. I can't imagine that any person, rational, compassionate person, would say, oh, no, we need more war. We don't need more peace. I know there's a few people in Congress that seem to be always wanting a new war, but we've already doing six. six wars currently against six foreign countries, sometimes just with little drone attacks, but it's scary.
How are we doing with those wars? Are we winning any of them?
Well, I'm still wondering what the purpose is on the Democracy Now! Show that now precedes the New Journal. Every Friday we hear about national, international news with an angle that is not available on other media. Amy Goodman and the Pacifica team have a great show and brilliant discussions, spirited discussions about topics. And today, of course, they had to bring up the new war in Mali, which I don't think we're directly connected with, but the French are.
Not yet, we're not. But
and
stay tuned.
It's crazy. It's unbelievable. And it's probably unwinnable no matter what side you're on.
Yeah.
So in any event, let's go to our special guest who has just arrived in the station, Janet Battelow, Dearborn Heights City Council Person. Welcome to the new WHFR Journal.
Thank you for having me this afternoon.
Well, you're very welcome. This is what they call in the radio and TV business a make good. So I hope we can really make this good. Well, you already did this interview here once.
Oh, yes, I did.
Can you remember everything you said? Go. I'm teasing.
Yeah. No, and it was our fault here at the state. Well, the fault of our technology. I mean, we are here thanks to the kindness of strangers, that sort of Blanche LeBois statement in that play by Tennessee Williams.
It sounded very ominous. Yes.
But, you know, we have a very small budget, and sometimes our equipment fails. I was told by Dennis it was a great interview. Netta Pigging, by the way, Dearborn Heights councilperson, has also come in as a guest right now, too, and help you get in the front gate here. And get
right.
Parked.
I appreciate that.
Showed you the quick way to get in the building and so on. So we're very happy to allow you, since that didn't go so well, to sort of recreate the interview. And I'll let Dennis take over as our lead on this at this point. And we have about 30 minutes, if that's good for you.
That is. Thanks. Okay. I hope I can do as well. I don't know.
You were great. Don't worry.
Well, we won't talk about it before. Everything you say now is brand new to our listeners.
That's true.
I
have
complete confidence.
Go, Dennis.
Well, and actually, I mean, one of the things that I'd like to start with, because we did start with this and it's leading where I want to go, your background, from what we discussed, is varied a little bit, but tell us a little about your background, and then I want to know the catalyst for actually getting, because you've been 12 years. This is your 12th
this
year.
This is my 12th year in the city council, yes. Well, my background, such as it is, I have an undergraduate degree from Lawrence Tech University in accounting.
Okay.
And then I have a MBA from Wayne State University in finance with a minor in taxation.
Okay.
So I'm one of those number cruncher bean counter people.
Which, obviously, people have different roles, and city council, that really lent itself. It sounds like, actually, from some of the meetings that I've went to, especially the budget meetings, you were a big part of those meetings.
The budget time of the year is my favorite time. Definitely get to use my skill set a little bit more there. And, you know, I also sit on the pension board, the general government pension board, so I... because I used to be a financial representative, stockbroker, whatever you want to call it. So I use my skills from that in the pension board as well. So
let's look back 12 years ago. What was the catalyst? Because somebody doesn't. Well, I'm not going to say somebody doesn't just wake up one morning and say I want to be on city council.
No, they don't actually. And I can definitely attest to that. The catalyst was my wonderful younger brother. Because if I call him my little brother, he gets a little upset.
Yeah.
But he actually said to me, "Well, geez, Jan, you know, I just graduated with my MBA," and he said, "Gosh, you have all this extra time now. What are you going to do?"
Right.
And I said, "Well, you know, I'm looking around for, you know, different sort of position, this and that." And he says, "Well, you know, there's this vacancy on the city council." And I said, "Really?" And I said, "Well, I'll look into that." And, you know, I went to the meetings and I, you know, went through the procedure. I had my letter of interest and I submitted my resume and the reasons why I wanted to be on the council. And I was not selected.
Okay.
And actually, strangely enough, in the same year, there was another vacancy from
which
another member that
frequently.
That year was a stellar year for vacancies. And I applied again for the second vacancy and was not selected. And that was a disappointing evening because that was actually my birthday.
Oh, wow.
So I thought, well, happy not birthday to me.
Yeah, really.
But anyway, after that, somebody turned around, and I don't remember this person, but it was somebody in the audience, and they said, "Well, geez, you've been doing this for about a year now. I've been going to council meetings, study sessions, you know, reading the packets. Are you going to run?" And I thought, well, you know what? I am interested in this. I think I can, you know, give something back to the city in that way. And since most of my family has worked for the city. My dad actually was a retired magistrate and court administrator from City of Dearborn Heights, and my brother's a current, now lieutenant in the fire department. So I thought, well, yeah, I'm gonna do that. So I did.
This particular year, and as you know, I've gotten more involved with the city because of writing for the Press and Guide. So I did attend a lot of the meetings starting like the beginning of 2012 or around February. And I found it really interesting because the hot topic at the time, and I know it hasn't gone away either, it was the budget and the fact that we being the city of Dearborn Heights, had to come up with a budget deficit.
Plan. A deficit reduction plan.
And
yes.
Tell me, this was not a choice of Dearborn Heights. This
oh
was
no, this is
state,
well, according to state law, cities cannot run a deficit. I guess only the federal government gets to do that.
Yeah, lucky them.
So when you do run a deficit, of course, the state knows about it, mm-hmm. and required under law is a deficit reduction plan, which we have submitted three of them. First one was rejected and then, came back because they can only be up to a maximum of 5 years, and ours exceeded that.
Okay.
Of course, this is put together by the administration.
Okay.
The council just has to approve it.
And I think that was because we were using the current year as a year, which you couldn't.
You just couldn't use 6 years, period. Mm-hmm. However, it didn't matter which years you used, you just couldn't use six. Five was the max. So. Of course, I have referred to this before as the work of fiction because for me, it's just a bunch of numbers on the paper that in, some of the years, 14 and 15 particularly, when union contracts are up, that the administration thinks that we're going to get about $2 to $3 million out of those or in savings. And I just don't believe that that's going to happen. And I really don't like forecasting in this way because I don't think we really have concrete numbers. And as we all know, negotiations are an iffy thing at best.
Absolutely.
So it really worries me. The first year, we're now into our second year of the fifth year.
Because it starts actually in June?
Well, our current our budget goes from July 1 to June 30th.
Okay.
So we've already exhausted 1 year of this budget deficit reduction plan, which I have to say I've never voted for. I've always voted against these. But we didn't make it the first year. We were supposed to run a surplus, and we ran a deficit.
Right.
Didn't surprise me, but, the state really doesn't like when you're not following your own budget deficit plan.
Right, right. Well, two things stood out at those meetings that I attended. One of them was a lot of people involved said, well, no, wait a minute. Remember, this can be amended. This doesn't have to be engraved in stone, and we can amend it later as an ongoing process. That didn't make you happy.
You know what? It doesn't make me happy because not only have I not voted for this three times, I've also not voted for our city's budget for the last 3 years. And the reason I haven't done that is because it's the same thing. I go through the budget line by line, department by department. I look back 3 years, which the information is provided to us on the budget, and, I spot things that, look, we didn't spend that, we didn't do this, or maybe we can make some changes to reduce it. And I always have suggestions as to how to do that. I think this past year was the only time when one of my suggestions was even taken up by the council and actually passed. But we, as a council, at least in the 11 years that I've been around, not that long, but long enough, we've never made amendments. We don't even hardly review the budget. I'd like to do it monthly.
Sure.
And make changes. If things are not going along as they should be, I feel we should be making monthly changes to that. Unfortunately, what we normally do is it's at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And I hate that.
Well, in addition to the amendments, there was also a hot topic, and that was that part of the budget was based on projections that the police department would be writing tickets, and that would be, for lack of a better phrase, generating revenue.
Well, it's a function of what they do.
Sure.
I mean, they write a ticket.
$2 million, I think.
Yeah, it was $2 million. That's right, Ned. But it's hard to project that because we all know the process. I mean, you get pulled over, you get written a ticket, and then you've got some options. You go to court. So we can't tell the court what to do with it. They can be dismissed. They can be reduced. They can,
just too many variables.
There are too many variables for us to actually, I think, calculate a certain number. And, you know, unfortunately, that's really what's happened. This last deficit reduction plan that was another amendment actually was amended because the revenue from the police fluctuated, let's put it that
way,
quite a bit.
No, and I agree, and I shared this story with you that I went in, we had, my daughter had two tickets on a car that my name was on also. I went in, and because of the circumstances, they were both dismissed.
Right.
So that's 200 and some odd dollars that the city didn't get. I don't know, I'm not going to say they were counting
on it. Well,
it's
not even that. It's, you got to think of the cost. You've got an officer goes out in a city vehicle using fuel, their time, then they have to go to court.
Who's there?
The court has to mail you a mailer telling you when to come in. Court staff is utilized. Judge is utilized. So there's all these upfront costs that we put out when we write a ticket. So if we get absolutely nothing for it, we're in the hole.
So based on that reality, what you just said.
Overtime for the policeman, too, sometimes.
Well, it, so.
Well,
I mean,
labor costs.
Generating revenue from tickets is, I mean, it's hit or miss at best.
I guess.
Well, that's what led Tom Berry, your colleague, to actually put a rather harshly worded editorial in the Dearborn Press. And
well, you know, I actually did try to look that up, and I really couldn't find it because I didn't know what month of the year it was.
Could have been out, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was a little.
I think
it was
none
past,
of us saw.
Well, it was past 6 months, and actually when I just gave him a call. I said, hey, Tom, can you refresh my memory, please?
Yeah.
And he did, and I'm like, oh, yeah, well, that was a while ago. And he says, yeah, you know how that things go, and they kind of float around, and it's still a topic we're talking about today, so
sure.
It's relevant.
Well, yeah, and it's relevant to me because I actually wrote a story for the Press and Guide based on that meeting, and I got bumped because of the editorial.
Well,
but
it happens.
I have to give him credit, though, because his was worded a little more directly than I would have. I stayed objective, and it was passionate, you know?
Yes.
I have to tell you, from my covering the city, I meet a lot of people, and a lot of people ask me, and especially because this will be the last year of your
yeah, this
third
is
term.
The fourth year of my third term.
Got it. Thank
yes.
you. And people ask me, well, do you think Councilwoman Badalo would consider running for mayor? Is that on the agenda? And I'm going to ask you straight up, is that something you would consider?
Yes. I am considering it.
And what are some of the issues that make that, I guess, what's the catalyst to that? And what are some of the issues that are most important to you?
Well, what's disturbed me over, obviously, the last 3 years, but definitely more than that, is the fact that, you know, when I came into office, and I looked this up, so 11 years ago, the city had over $8 million in fund balance. So rainy day fund, savings account, however you want to say it, we had this money set aside. And over the years, we have dipped into it. And when we got to zero fund balance, I really thought that there would have been an uproar from people out there because I was appalled.
Right.
You know, and I really thought that there were measures that we could have taken over the period of time to, you know, either reduce our expenses or I like to increase our revenue, not through tax hikes or anything like that particularly, but I think there's opportunities out there, you know, through grants and various other things that we can do. Now we are negative $5.7 million, and I'm just outraged at that. I really think it's from a lack of planning. I can't even say poor planning. It has to be a lack of. And
I just got to clarify this. So Dearborn Heights has no rainy day fund?
Negative $5.7 million.
So less than no.
so you're
yes.
actually in debt. You're
we
running
are in
a debt right
and
now.
And actually, this is why we have a deficit
plan,
reduction
if you
plan.
Look at that.
There's a plan,
yes.
but that's still.
Right. Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely. So, I mean, that's just, you know, I know that word is thrown around, you know, a lot these days because, you know, a lot of cities are in trouble. I mean, obviously, the economy has something to do with, you know, how things are these days. However, a lot of people, and my husband happens to be an economics major, even though he's an auditor by profession, but we've been talking about this for 6 to 7 years, how, you know, economists out there have been speaking about, you know, the economy and, you know, this housing bubble and all these different things that were indicators in the market. So the fact that, you know, our administration, the mayor in particular, I mean, he's a CPA, he's supposed to be a numbers guy, and the fact that he didn't do more when he knew that things were that bad to plan for, you know, the inevitable. We're going to get less property taxes. When the home values go down, the city gets less property taxes,
absolutely.
Period.
So this is you're listening to the new WHFR Journal, and in studio, Jay and I are speaking with Netta Pigian and Janet Badalo, both council members, Dearborn Heights City Council. I want to take one step back. This is kind of important to me, and I was a little bit surprised at the answer. In May, you will officially run or state your intention for running for mayor.
You have to file in May. Deadline is
yes.
14th or something?
Yes.
Okay. But unlike when you ran for city clerk, you did not win that particular race, but you you went right back to your seat on city council. That won't be the case, will it?
No, actually, this time I'm not going to be pursuing the current seat that I hold on the city council in order to run for mayor.
Okay, and I mean that's a strong.
It is strong, and you know, I've thought about this a lot.
Well, you can't, isn't the way that
well, you can't, you know,
it's
do
one or
that.
The other. Right.
Well, it's one or the other, yes.
So it's my question. Ned, is this the end of your current term? So
No.
So you don't have to worry about an election issue in November. It's just the mayor and how many council
the
people?
The treasurer, the clerk, and four council persons.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
It's going to be a big year
for we actually do differently than some of our surrounding communities. Mm-hmm. Like Dearborn, they do it all at once. Mm. Allen Park does it all at once. We have a staggered. So we usually have three council members that are up in 1 year, which Ned is a part of that group.
Right.
And
yes.
I'm a part of the four group that also goes with the clerk and treasurer and mayor.
And it's staggered by 2 years. So look, actually, I'm not up for two more years.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. I think the thing that gets confusing is like when Her Honor, Marge Van Houten. She was appointed to the circuit court, correct?
Yes,
and
that's
when Mr. Kaczynski came in, Joe Kaczynski.
Mm-hmm.
But that seems like that happens.
Well, you know, let's put it this way.
More frequently than I imagined.
Life changes a lot. You know, and of course, we all know that Margie is an attorney. I mean, she's been an attorney for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So she has run for district court judge in the past. And so it was a passion of hers. So certainly, you know, I can't see anything wrong with that because everyone's life changes. And, you know, she put in a lot of years to the community. I believe, oh gosh, I'm going to get this wrong. It's either 14 or 16 years that she was with the city in that capacity. Mm. So that's a lot of time to dedicate to community service.
And plus, I mean, her father was a big part of it.
Her father was former mayor.
Yeah.
Actually, her father was mayor when my dad was magistrate. So that, I don't know, I was just a kid and so was she. But that must have been interesting.
It was interesting this past Tuesday. I saw you at the joint mayor. What is it, the state of the
tale
city?
Tale of Two Cities, I think they called
All right, I didn't want to.
One is the state of the city. The other, Dearborn mayor, has a state of the city in February.
Right, but yes. The point of it was that the joint the two chambers of commerce merged. We talked about this a little bit.
Yeah,
earlier.
Now it's the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce.
What was your you heard Mayor Pileko talk about some of the businesses that have come into the city, he feels based on some of the things I said that this is headed in the right direction. I'm going to ask you, if you felt that way, I don't know that you would feel as strongly about running. Is that accurate?
Well, actually, we're always happy, and I'm always happy on a personal level, that businesses are continuing to come into our city. However, if we actually talked about the flip side of it, the number that have left or gone out of business, I think vastly outweighs that. We've had some larger businesses come in that have taken up some brownfield areas, which always is great to redevelop a brownfield. And there's some, you know, monetary assistance for them as well in tax abatements and
such. Explain a brownfield, too.
Well, a brownfield, I mean, it's a technical thing, so I'll just explain it how I understand it.
Right.
Like a gas station or any other place that has hazardous waste or whatever can actually make a green field, which you can put anything on, into a brown field. So there has to be some remediation to the land in order to make it a greenfield again. So that's what they'll call it, brownfield redevelopment.
Okay.
And it's a wonderful thing. We've had a couple of them happen.
Was the Armored Group one of, did they go into it?
Yes. The Armored Group has gone into a building that, you know, really hasn't been utilized in a long time. So they're taking advantage of some things the state's given and some tax abatements, but it's going to be a huge investment in that property. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to it. I actually toured when they were a temporary property in Inkster just across the way. I toured their facility and saw what they were doing. And I really think it fits into where we are physically located in the state of Michigan because it does have something to do with cars.
It's a fascinating, just to, so the listeners know, this is, they take what start out as regular
vehicles.
Normal vehicles. And they reinforce them and make them to the point where they're like armored vehicles. And I think a lot of this, it isn't so much, I mean, their biggest sales aren't necessarily domestic, are they?
No, actually, strangely enough, they're not, which is a good thing that we're so close to the airport.
Yeah.
So, like I said, the location is really good for them, great for us, of course. And, you know, in several years, we're going to get a significant tax increase in that property, you know, when the abatement's over. And I think it'll be a good thing.
You know, I can interrupt for a moment. I happened to go, there was an architect seminar for continuing educational credits. The subject was brownfields, which was extremely interesting to me. There's even a brownfield credit for historic districts.
Wow.
Yeah, I should say that Dearborn has benefited from, I think at least a half dozen major brownfield development grants. Of course, we've had a lot of industrial waste from previous developments in the 20s and 30s and 40s, and so that's a way to help the cities clean up those areas so that they can be less expensively developed. But I guess it's federal and state that has some brownfield money.
It can be, yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually, another one of our brownfield developments was the Walgreens on Van Born and Telegraph. Oh. And that was particularly good for us because not only did we get to, that was an old oil change garage facility, very unattractive. Mm-hmm. So now we have a very attractive, you know, place to go. People like it. But the better thing that people don't ever see is under there is a water retention system.
No kidding.
Yes. So, you know, it definitely helps out with, you know, the rainwater runoff and flooding and things that we have in the area.
You know, some of the people I've talked to on council, I won't bring up names or whatever, but some of the people, a couple of people, let's say, have looked at Dearborn and say, well, that's a, you know, for as far as modeling our city, Dearborn's a model. Other people have said, no, we're our own entity. I think the Mayor Pletko brought it up really well that Dearborn, as opposed to big corporations, that has a lot of smaller, he called them mom and pop, or businesses that are smaller compared to like Ford Motor Company and some of them Dearborn. How do you feel about that?
Well, actually, I would have to agree with him on that point. You know, we certainly are the mom and pop bedroom community. We're laid out a lot differently than Dearborn, and they definitely have, you know, large corporations that they depend upon for part of their tax base. Sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad,
exactly.
Especially when they want a tax reduction.
Yeah.
But, you know, we depend on the small businesses to come and go, and we have, you know, about three business districts that we can cite, you know, the Van Born area, Ford Road area, Warren Avenue area. You know, they're not together, which is unfortunate, but they are distinctly different, and I think they offer something for everyone.
I agree. This is we're speaking with Janet Badalow and Ned Apigian, also in studio on the new WHFR Journal. I wonder about some of the other issues. Again, running for mayor, putting all your eggs in that basket, are there certain things? I don't want to kick off your campaign or anything like that, but I just think it's important to kind of figure out where you're headed.
Well, over the years, I've seen some things that I don't like, processes in the city. Negotiations, for me, is one of the sticklers.
Mm-hmm.
It takes too long. I don't think that we're doing all that we can to put forth the amount of information that everybody needs. I really think that we need to be more of a team effort. I think a lot of times employees and residents alike really don't believe that we're in the situations that we are. I know that myself, you know, talking about our budget and various things over the years, you know, people are like, well, wait a minute. But, you know, the mayor said everything was fine and we're still getting our trash picked up and the police are still out on the road and the fire department came when, you know, somebody needed them. And I said, well, yeah, that is true, but that doesn't mean that things are operating well. Many of our departments are completely understaffed and our resources are very limited in certain areas. And so I think that, and negotiations have a lot to do with how much money we have available for certain things.
Can I interrupt for a moment to help Janet? The most important thing is the mayor is involved with the negotiations. We're not. When you mentioned a team, it's not like
actually,
we're
the mayor's not in the negotiations, and that is a problem.
Well, his agent, believe me, can't do anything he doesn't want her to do. But my point is that
if I can ask technically, who is that agent? Is it an assistant to the mayor, or do you hire a lawyer?
No,
to come
actually,
in?
That I'm glad you brought that up because it is his executive assistant to the mayor, and I've objected for years her doing any negotiations on our behalf because she does not have the skill set for it. I don't think a high school education prepares you for that type of job, and I've been wanting to hire a professional for years.
I know school districts generally hire attorneys who have actually mediation experience, and it is a specialized skill, certainly. Just like,
I would say so.
Just like Janet Battelow, you have the economics background.
Accounting
the background.
The husband's the
Excuse
economics.
Me. Okay. Well, it's all in the family.
It
then,
is
I guess.
All in the family.
And Ned, of course, has the civil planning background,
yes.
And that's an important area, urban planning, that a lot of cities don't have anyone that has any direct professional knowledge, I'd call it, working knowledge. And so you need all kinds there. But I'm a little bit surprised. I don't know who does it in Dearborn or how it's set up here. I know we always have negotiations going on with all the various union groups at one way or another. And it's crucial that, of course, that those contracts be fair but also realistic these days, too.
Yes, realistic is definitely the word for it. And I know as a council member we've had meetings with mayor on, certain negotiations. And the council has expressed their displeasure with the fact the mayor has not participated in a lot of them and actually demanded that he do so because, he is the one that is supposed to be doing that. That's part of his job description.
My reason for bringing this up was not to talk about that, was the point that we, people might have the idea that we're like equal, first among.
Council
we're
people
not
are not part of it.
Yeah, we're not first among equals. And the big thing is most of the money, half the budget, has to do with pensions, salaries, and we're not negotiating them. It's like going to a restaurant and you're looking at a menu. It's not like you're looking at a menu. You're presented with items on the dinner. This is the dinner. You might want to take the peas out or something. So the question is, that's where the point she's making, that's where most of the money is.
Mm-hmm. At the same time, there was a special session where people from the police department there, and I know that Chief Gavin was also there, and I remember Councilwoman Marge Horvath specifically saying, please help us. Please. Apparently there were cuts that were across the board in other areas of the city.
Yes.
Yes. And they said, well, we did what we could.
Well, actually, we were trying to get a reduction.
10% of the, that's what he was talking
Yeah,
about.
We were trying to get a 10% reduction in salaries or something across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And the police department in particular, they were one of the first unions to agree to any reductions, but it was not 10%.
Okay.
And I know during our budget hearing, it was something that kind of bothers me in a way, and I'm glad that Marge had brought it up as well with help us, because that's what I want. I expect every department to do what they can to help us, and helping us could be applying for grants. And I used, while the police were there, I'm sure they didn't appreciate it, but I used the fire department as an example, because they've brought in almost $1 million in grant monies in the last year. And now, while I don't expect every grant application that anybody ever fills out to, yep, we won it automatically, but I expect them to actually do it. And I asked the police how many they had done, and they told me zero. And that was really disturbing. Okay. So
you just got a $500,000 fire truck, right?
That was part of the almost $1 million. It's like 850 some change that the fire department wrote for our grant.
For the grant. Mm-hmm. We have just a few more minutes. We're talking to Janet.
The mayor identified that as a TIFA deal the other day. Do you remember?
TIFA is also contributing part of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're talking to Janet Badlow, Netta Piggin, also in studio for the WHFR Journal. One of the things that's, and I'm just going to throw this out there because this was brought up a lot. You know that I work for the TV studio and it's in the Berwyn Center. And
yes.
I hear on a regular basis people saying, when you talk to anybody on council, please don't let them shut the Eaton or the Berwyn Centers down. And that was something that I think was on the table for a little while on council.
Well, we were looking at, various ways to reduce the budget. But I know that a lot of them didn't remember that probably about 4 or 5 years ago now, I actually wanted to do a facility study of every building in the city to see how it was being utilized. And strangely enough, when the court, state court administrator, wanted to actually consolidate the courts, they did a study of our court, our justice center, and found there was a lot of empty space. And I said, well, wouldn't that be great to just move City Hall into there? I mean, we have less people to maintain our buildings and too many buildings. And the buildings are not 100% utilized. And it's only smart to utilize your building because you're paying for it the best you can. So I think that people got the wrong idea. It was thrown out there to close, you know, senior centers due to a lack of attendance. We were told that only 1,000 people use them on an annual basis, and we have 57,000 and change people that live in this city.
Right.
So when you're talking about the $200,000 that we spend on an annual basis to maintain them, that's a lot per capita.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Janet Badalow, thank you so much. And thanks for, again, it was breaking news last week.
But well, speaking of that, I know I want to give her a chance to maybe say a final word, but this is Jay Kornick. On the last Sunday's Press and Guide, it talks about a topic that's very at the forefront of most of our students here at Henry Ford Community College, and that is traffic enforcement, that is speeding tickets on Ford Road between Inkster and Evergreen. And, of course, we're at Evergreen and Ford Road here. We get a lot of new students, like 40% of our 18,000 students are first-time students every fall, and you get a lot of traffic tickets that you are able to give. Now, if they're going over the speed limit, that's too bad, but the stories I hear, and I talked to your police chief a couple years ago here on the show, Lee Gavin, about this, that a lot of these tickets are for like 5 miles an hour over the limit. And as you maybe know, the speed limits do change, especially as you're going west from the college. Right here at the college, Ford Road is almost, I think, 50 miles an hour.
It's 50 miles an hour.
And then it
here.
Drops
to
rather
45.
Quickly to 45. I think it's 35 when you get closer to Dearborn Heights.
40.
Actually, it's
40.
40.
It goes to 40.
40. Yeah, it
okay.
goes to 40.
And, of course, people coming here for the first time, maybe they're late for class or whatever. Now, I know there's two crashes there, and four men were killed in less than 24 hours. And that's awful. But considering the number of cars that use Ford Road, so how do you feel about this? I mean, for years, it's always been called Ford Road, even before this tragic event, of course, and within 24 hours. You know, one of those, speed traps.
Speed trap, sure.
Well, you know, I hate to say it, but since technology has changed and everybody has a smartphone and different things, people are doing more than just driving anymore.
Yeah.
So I hate to say it. You know, I have a smartphone myself, but I have a Bluetooth. I talk wireless on it all the time. And if I have to do anything else, I'm at a complete stop, not going anywhere while I'm doing it. Now, if a lot of people did that, I think that they would actually realize that they may be speeding or driving erratically or whatever. But our officer came to talk to us about this at our last council meeting, and he said that the tickets that he was writing were people that were going over 15 miles an hour over the speed limit.
Oh, that's pretty.
Now, I hate to say, because I used to work in the court system myself, actually in Dearborn, years ago, and 5 miles over the speed limit is still illegal.
Right.
So
no, you're right.
Whether you're doing one or not, but you know what? I think we're talking more about people's safety because it's gotten worse and worse over the years. I mean, I've lived in this community for 35 years. I've worked in Dearborn a lot of those years. And so I've come and, used Ford Road, Michigan Avenue and the like. And certainly it's a safety issue for everyone because people are doing more than just driving.
I would think any new student enrolling at the college should get a special email from our president or from our campus safety people letting them know what the speed limits are there.
Sure.
You know,
yeah,
first
it does
of all,
change.
Too.
I mean, so, you know, it's 50 over here.
They're going faster
here,
on Telegraph
and
they turn the corner, you know, onto Ford Road.
When you get to, I think it's Outer Drive, it's 45. Mm-hmm. And then when you hit Telegraph and Ford Road and you go in, you're going west, it's 40 miles an hour. I mean, there's four distinct areas.
Even the road stays divided in multiple lanes.
It does.
There's a lot of residential addresses right there in that strip, and so you need to have the lower limit.
Yeah, especially
limit.
In our area, the Hyde shopping mall area.
It's not
area.
An unfair speed limit. I'm not saying that, but it really does. The city has sort of bad PR, and it's been called a speed trap for years, but there's reasons for that, and if the enforcement now is at least 15 miles an hour over the limit, absolutely, and people driving erratically, you know, that's true too. Like maybe driving too slowly because they're on a cell phone and everybody's got to pass them like crazy and they get mad.
I find the people that are on texting or on the cell phone tend to drive a lot slower.
A final word, Dennis?
Well,
Janet?
I have nothing to say.
I have nothing to say.
Janet, I'd like to explain, because she's on the pension board, how important, how much money that pension board, just simply how much money in our budget we have to put in every month.
Ooh, okay. Well,
well actually, on a, I'll just do it really quickly, yeah. really quickly. So it's about $1 million contribution, and this is to general government only. The police and fire have a separate pension in which they make a contribution themselves as well as the city. So for the city's general fund, general government, it's about $1 million. And, you know, I support pensions because I think people having money by the time that they retire puts it back into the economy.
And we're going to get more into Dearborn Heights News and Views. It's theoretically every second Tuesday here on the Tuesday Forum, Technology Willing. You know, we're going to have that show. It's going to be archived on our website. Just this month, we couldn't do that. So thank you, Janet Battelow and Netta Piggy, for coming on the Journal today to give us some of those upsides and insights into some of those questions and upsets, too. There's always challenges, and we certainly want to help Dearborn Heights. Let's get the message out too. Second Tuesday each month from 1 to 2 p.m. and also, of course, on the website. But this month we weren't able to do it. But thank you for being here today. We're going to have more of the WHFR Journal. Thank you for being here after these comments from Jim Hightower.
In the scramble to fix the federal deficit, one of Washington's worst ideas is widely considered by political elites, including some Democrats, to be a good idea, even a painless fix. The idea is to raise the age of eligibility for both Social Security and Medicare, shoving it from 65 to 67 or beyond. After all, goes Washington's conventional wisdom, people live so much longer now, so it won't hurt to postpone eligibility and save a couple of years of taxpayer outlays to people. But, as economist and columnist Paul Krugman has pointed out, this bit of conventional wisdom is merely conventional, in the sense of trite. While life expectancy has gone up on average, it has not increased much for working stiffs, especially tens of millions of lower-wage and poor workers. Unlike being a member of Congress, the work that these people do tends to require heavy lifting, which can make you old fast. Requiring them to do it even deeper into old age and to wait longer for medical assistance is, as Krugman bluntly calls it, cruel. Bear in mind, too, that working-class families are precisely the people who count on Social Security and Medicare. They don't have the socialized medical benefits and golden pensions that those pampered conventional wisdom spouters in Congress get. Oh, one more thing. The purported savings from this fix are so minimal as to be illusory. In fact, shoving ill or crippled elderly workers out of the cost-effective Medicare system will jack up America's health care costs. This is Jim Hightower saying, so raising the retirement age is gratuitous as well as cruel, but mostly it's severely ignorant. What's at work here is a policy-making elite that includes no working-class people, so it can cluelessly believe that making the lives of these Americans worse is painless.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
The moon sinks low on the horizon as though it's trying to hide. Frightened animals flee into the woods, even though nothing seems to be chasing them. Nature has turned topsy-turvy. It can mean only one thing. The legislature is back in session. I've seen enough state legislatures in action, Michigan, for example, Florida, and of course Wisconsin, to know that our Texas bunch doesn't have a lock on lunacy, but we certainly have more than our share of loco lawmakers. Take George Lavender. Yes, please. This right-wing peer of the lower chamber became a hero of the Kuki Caucus in 2011 by sponsoring and passing a bill intended to save us Texans from an unspeakable horror. Energy-efficient light bulbs. Because of a 2007 federal law enacted by that notorious lefty president George W. Bush, light bulb makers were required to produce high-efficiency bulbs to replace the old energy suckers. "Over my dead body," cried Lavender. It was his Alamo moment as he rose in defense of the holy right of Texans to waste as much energy as we damn well please. To counteract the big bad Fed's outrageous attempt to save energy for America and save money for consumers, Lavender's law invited bulb makers to set up shop here and freely produce the old-style high-wattage bulbs. Where else but Texas? Imagine how proud Davy Crockett would be to know that he died to make this possible. Unfortunately for Lavender, major bulb makers were already profiting from the burgeoning conservation market, so they had no interest in going backwards. "The most disappointing thing to me," Lavender now says dimly, "is that we haven't found anyone willing to put in a plant." This is Jim Hightower saying, and that's why the moon hides and animals flee when legislatures convene. It's scary to see so many 5-watt bulbs sitting in 100-watt sockets.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
And this is the new WHFR Journal for January the 18th, 2013. Happy New Year, if that's still relevant a couple weeks in. Maybe we just got to hunker down and have a good year, make it our own, and forget about just wishing Happy New Year, huh? A couple of big issues in the paper. I think I mentioned this before. The city of Dearborn has voted to support a $4 million tax exemption for Ford Motor Company. This was in Patch.com on the 11th, last Friday. And I may have mentioned it even last Friday, so excuse me. But I'm always against this, and I have been. I don't know how you feel. Talk about corporate bailouts. Corporate tax exemptions don't seem fair to me. Because the big companies, especially the big companies that have a lot of jobs at stake, they can play off one city against the other, one state against the other, in terms of their location or their additions. And if Ford had 20, 30 million for a new R&D facility, why did they have to opt out of paying another 2 million in taxes? Sure, it saves them 2 million. Okay, but is that the deal breaker? And Dearborn went along with it, and everybody voted for it because of the certain situation. I think there should be a federal law that the taxes stay the taxes, and that they're the same tax in every state for business. Whoa, is that radical, huh? That's right. The same amount for every state and every city within the state. It should be the same thing, so that you're not playing, and bankrupting one state or one city compared to the other, you know, for a period of time, just to get them to start up their business there. And as it happens in most cases around the country, they start up with a tax abatement, and guess what? A tax exemption. They're going to ask for it as soon as that's gone, 15 years later. And then they do that threat again. Well, you know, if you don't give us that, we'll just up and move to another city or another state. Well, that's just not right. There should be one corporate tax rate that's the same all around the country. And then what are the criteria? Well, I don't know. Transportation, closeness to roads and railroads, quality of the neighborhoods, and I think all corporations, big or small, according to their perhaps their income level or whatever, have to pay the same fair rate for the services that are provided by the states and the cities. And I say this needs to be done nationwide. What do you think? I mean, tell your representatives about these crazy ideas. I think we need some big ideas, some new ideas, and very fair ideas, too, here. Enjoy your tax exemption, Ford Motor. You better give us all those new jobs you're promising, or I'll hold a grudge for sure. Okay. Also on Patch.com, details have emerged on the design of the new Dearborn City Hall, and that's also in the paper, one of the papers this week. Let me see here. Press and guide from this last Wednesday, the January 16th. New City Hall will have more services at the front counter is the headline. That's right. You just sort of walk in. It's going to be very open. You don't have to go to a separate office. There's going to be a single desk at the front for every major department and a very open work environment, no walls dividing them. And if you do need privacy for some issue that comes up, there's a number of small conference rooms. There's 18 rooms in the plan for the new City Hall. Obviously, the new City Hall is controversial here in Dearborn because people don't think it was really necessarily. We had a City Hall, but it needed a lot of renovation. It's an old building, maybe not a good workflow or efficient in terms of, heating and cooling. But we got the new building now, folks, and so it's obvious that City Hall the current administration wants you to know about the new design and the new emphasis on the service, although it is pointed out in the Patch.com article that the city will not be using most of the second floor. It's a two-floor building, and they're going to use a couple spaces on the second floor, but most of the second floor is going to be vacant. Unless maybe the Dearborn Public Schools decides to ditch their ailing and aging Tenike Administrative Center and move over, but they don't want to do it while there's a controversy between now and November, in fact, this year, because they're up for some millage renewal. So if they jump into this and they jump on the wrong side, that is, they decide to come in or not come in of this debate, it might affect who the mayor is going to be, or it might affect whether or not they get their millage renewed if people are still holding a grudge. The new City Hall sounds like a good idea for me, using that sort of strange area between East and West Dearborn that is Michigan Avenue, so it'll have sort of equidistant either way. Ned, you're not on mic right now. Well, I could make you on mic, but where's the current Dearborn City Hall? Is it in North Dearborn Heights? Is it North Dearborn Heights, Ned? Oh, I got you.
Yes.
It's in the North Dearborn Heights area, because I didn't realize until I looked at Dearborn Heights on Wikipedia today that you've got that area of the city in the north, and you got the area of the city in the south, and they're just connected by a sort of a thin ribbon. Is it Telegraph?
No, it's Gully.
Gully Road, yeah, mm-hmm. running north-south. So you're sort of connected by that strange road. So there's actually North Dearborn Heights and South Dearborn Heights.
Actually, the history of that is that's what's left over from Dearborn Township. So
okay.
That the city didn't incorporate.
Okay.
And well, where I live. In, yes.
That's what we're talking about. Right. Is the Patch.com article regarding the I walked Ms. Battle out. Is it discussing anything the mayor said at the recent State of the City?
No.
Because he, Ned, you might remember, he came out, one of the questions during the Q&A was, what's the status of that building? And he flat out said it was too good of a deal for the price and for the amount of space. It was just $3.2 million. It was just too good of a deal, mm-hmm. And the other part of the equation is that Art Space was very serious about getting the city hall.
And we certainly hope that they're able to get all the grants to actually buy it now too, or we'll have.
He said it's moving
building.
Forward. You know.
Well, I know, step by step, inch by inch.
Sure.
It was an old joke from Burlesque, but and it ends badly, by the way.
Yeah, Niagara Falls.
Yeah, Niagara Falls, exactly. Well, okay, so it's time to end the new WHOR Journal for today. Just a couple of things to pay attention to. Of course, the North American International Auto Show, I still call it the Detroit Auto Show, is going to start tomorrow and go through the following weekend. We're going to have a special journal edition of the auto show next Friday. Hope to have some automotive writers, magazine mm-hmm. writers here,
or an
editor here if we're lucky. I'm going to go down this week myself, and I always take extensive notes. I love cars. I know a lot about them. And, of course, that's one of the biggest businesses in Michigan still. We're still making a large percent of the cars, not the majority percent of the cars that are sold in America right here in Michigan. We had two auto show winners for best car of the year, which was the Cadillac ATS, they decided, made here, I think, in Lansing, and the formerly Dodge Ram pickup, 1500, now just called the Ram pickup. That was the best car, truck of the year, and that's made in Warren, I believe. So we're still in the auto manufacturing game here in the U.S. It's very important to us, so that's going to be a lot of fun to talk about, sort of a wrap-up of it, because there's only that second weekend left. Also, this coming up this Monday on the Monday Forum, which is every Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. here, we have a special program from National Public Radio for Martin.